Welcome to Discovery 1, Module 1.
Before we start lecture, we should probably tell people so that they are not completely confused, that we have a new Discovery instructor. The person who will be joining Brian Shaw in teaching this term is actually Nehemiah Hall. So he has taken some CCNA courses and done a lot of computer and networky stuff, so you guys should really enjoy his teaching, and he has actually been teaching for quite a while technology to other blind people. So welcome him.
Yeah, and if anyone has any questions, you can get a hold of me, and before we end here, I'll give contact info that you guys can use to get a hold of me. And Brian and I will be switching off different weeks, giving lectures and that sort of thing. Brian will be giving this week, and next week will probably be me. I look forward to teaching you.
I should add you to the Discovery Instructors alias too, so that they can get you at discovery-instructors@ciscovision.org, which is how they should be able to get you.
That works.
Okay. Anything else before I start, Grace?
I wouldn't think so. Has anybody got any questions, general questions, before you get started?
Noob question. The curriculum for this, I need to actually use the one on Cisco dot whatever, don't I?
No. It's up on qcat.org, and the username is Cavi, and the password is Cavi, and it is Flash.
Right.
As long as you can use accessible
I
scenes,
did have a question good. About that, actually,
I'll have
myself.
Another look, because I couldn't find it this morning, but I wasn't looking.
I compared the one on QCAT and the one on Cisco on the Cisco site, and it looked like the one on the Cisco site was a lot more clear text.
No. What you have to do is you have to use the click accessible theme link.
Use accessible theme. There's a thing up at the top. There's this link that you have to...
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I saw that on the Cisco site, but I didn't see it on the QCAT, but I must have just missed it. Okay.
It's on there, yeah.
Yeah,
I can help you later if you need a hand.
Yeah, if anybody gets stuck.
No, for some reason I saw it on the Cisco site and I didn't see it on the QCAT, but that just must have been the weirdness on my...
I was just there and I saw it.
I think I was looking in the wrong place.
Small change in this semester is we are not handing out text dumps. The reason we are not handing out text dumps Yeah, they did last semester. It was like, say the word and you get text dumps emailed to your inbox. We're not handing out text dumps this semester because this is the curriculum that the sighted students are provided with. And this is the curriculum that you are provided with. And it is accessible if you have Flash, which we concede is a minor inconvenience. But you are working from the same material as the sighted people, and we believe that that's important.
You could even have it show you the pictures if you want, and the accessible theme at the same time.
I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah,
you
can. It's on that first screen where it says choose chapter level. One of them is media presentation, and you can choose text, transcript only, media only, or both. So if you need a sight to help look at a picture for you, that's probably how you would do it.
Sweet.
If you have a genuine request for accessible to alternate formats, you need to submit that to Ian, and he will assess that. So.
All right. Any other questions before we move on? Okay. Before we actually get into lecture, I do want to make one or two quick comments about labs. I want to kind of keep to what Grace and Sean did for those in IT Essentials last semester with us. what we did is we had the labs do, like, within the week of the lecture. So if we had, for instance, like tonight we're going to do Chapter 1, I would prefer to have all labs in by next lecture, because I already did this lecture once on Friday night, and it only took the 2 hours, so, and I'm sure we can trim a little bit more off for some. So, I would absolutely love it if I could get all the labs in by next Monday / Tuesday, depending on your time zone. But if you do need the extra week, just shoot an email to Discovery Instructors and we'll give you the extra week. But if you need to need more time than that, we do need a reason as to why you would. The labs themselves aren't that bad. You could probably finish the Chapter 1 labs in probably 30 minutes at the most, maybe 45. They're really not that bad. So, and like I said, the first chapter is pretty much dealing with hardware and peripherals. So, there's probably a lot that that I can kind of skip over. If we need to go into a little bit more detail, we can. So that's that for labs, I think. Unless anybody has any questions. And the labs are, while I'm thinking about it, the labs are under CCNA Discovery, Discovery 1, and the labs. And there's, of course, the graphical and the non-graphical. So, they're all there. So, questions about labs before we get started?
Just a comment, only because I was asked this by someone else. There are, what, 3 of them for Chapter 1, I think?
I'd have to look. But I'm sure there's like 3 or 4.
They are not separated out into folders as they were for ITE1, so you have to pay close attention to the file names. But there are multiple labs per chapter, and they're all just in one folder, so be careful.
I could separate that, I suppose, if people complain too much.
I can do it if you want, Kerry.
It's okay, I've got access to the website.
Well, they were all right as they were.
Okay.
They were all right,
I didn't find them hard to look. Oh, good.
They were a little confusing at first, but once you understood the numbering, it was really easy.
Yeah, you just have to kind of look at them in quick.
When you mail your labs, unless you mail them in a group, if you mail the labs individually, if you could put the lab number in the subject line, I know I find that particularly helpful when I go to grade them.
Yeah, actually, that's basically a requirement to do that. If you don't put your lab number in, I may not be able to figure out what lab you're talking about. And if you put the wrong lab number in, and I think I've already graded your lab, and it gets deleted, that's all on you. Because that's almost happening.
You've yelled at me for that before.
I usually just email them straight from Word, and so the because that automatically puts all the numbers in yourself then itself then.
Yeah, that'd do.
If you right click the lab and hit send to email recipient, assuming of course you have an email client set up.
Yeah, same idea.
Email, it will say emailing, and then it will give the name of the lab. What I usually do is, when I've finished it, I rename it. I put Aiden's at the beginning of the lab, and then I send it off. So, you know, when I have the email client, it says emailing Aiden's whatever, and then, you know, the labs, and everything's right there. That also is a good way of telling whose lab it is. So, you know, when
and
you download
whether you've done
Aiden's
it or not.
6.3 lab. Yeah, exactly. You throw that, then when you download Aiden 6.3 lab, well, you know whose lab it is and you know what it's for, so.
Now they go to just the Carvey instructors?
That's Carvey instructors at CiscoVision.
No, I remembered the CiscoVision bit.
I wasn't saying it for you.
You cut off, though.
Yeah, it's CiscoVision.org.
Oh, sorry.
And the other one will still work, and I'm probably going to leave it there indefinitely, so if you do forget and put GOTS.net, it will make its way to the same location. But when our internet goes down for fast churn tomorrow, if your labs don't get there straight away, then you'll know why if you send it to the GOTS.net, because we'll be off the air for a few hours. So, yeah, CiscoVision.org is preferred.
If you email the labs, I don't mind if you email them individually or if you just do, because what I used to do is email the entire chapter's worth of labs. So, I don't care.
And one chapter at a time is good.
Yeah. I don't mind either way.
One email gets a bit much.
Also, just to clarify, with these labs, we just answer the questions in the lab itself and just email the whole thing?
Yeah.
Yes, that would be the preferred way to do it. Just answer them right in the labs and then change the file name to what... What I did is just added my name, like Aiden said, just added my name to the file name. And that would be the easier way to do it, and you know who it's coming from. So that would probably be the easier way to do it. And then it's easier on instructors to grade them too, because then they know whose labs have been submitted and whose haven't. Anything else?
The only other point Geraldine and I used to make was please keep a copy of all your labs, because if we ask you to resubmit them, well, I'm not marking your labs, but the instructors do their best to keep the labs in order, but as a student you are responsible for retaining a copy, so that if we ask, or anybody asks you to resubmit a lab, you are able to do that.
We do try to file them, but, you know.
It also makes redoing labs a snap.
Yeah, because you'll already have done it.
Turns a redo into a slight edit.
Yeah. That is a good point. Do keep a copy of your labs that you've done. Because if we do need to ask you to redo something, you can just scroll right down to the particular questions we need you to redo. Then you can just redo them. Resubmit it, and you're good to go. Okay. Anything else before we start in on this lecture? Alright, yeah, I was just wanting to set myself to Vox, so that way I don't have to hold the key down. Because I still haven't got my Braille display yet, but we'll take care of that. Okay. Welcome to Chapter 1 of Discovery 1, which is Home and Small Business. Now, this chapter is primarily dealing with all the hardware and peripherals that you will ever be dealing with in home and small business. So, obviously, we know that computers are pretty much everywhere in society. I don't think you can go anywhere without finding computers, PDAs, cell phones, anything like that. So, and we all know that the hardware, the operating system, and the applications all have to work together. Or your computer's just paperweight. So, just a nice little review. Who knows or who remembers from IT Essentials what the hardware of the computer is?
Any physical component.
Yep, that's it. That would be your internal and your external. Let's see. And then everybody knows what the operating systems are. I don't think we need to cover that. And your applications, well, that's pretty well self-explanatory, I think. That would be your Microsoft Word, Ventrilo, all that nice, good, wonderful stuff. So, they kind of break this up into a weird part, but anyway, they break up for local and networked applications, and they go down, and there are two different types of applications that they want you to be familiar with. They have business, industry, and general use. So, Luke's out. Anybody else want to define business, industry applications?
Something like an accounting program, or like I know when I was at Vision Australia, we used a particular client database program that was specifically designed for that kind of health industry, service industry sort of thing. So those sorts of applications?
Yes, that's it. It's specific applications that deal with like one kind of business or industry. So yeah, it's just like what you were saying about the database or the specific software for that business. What about general use software?
That would be programs like Word or Excel that the general user would use on their computer?
Yes, that's it. It's the general stuff that everybody uses. Okay, so then they go and they define local applications. So, who wants to take a shot at that one?
Wouldn't that be anything ran off of like a CD or installed directly to your computer?
Yeah, that would be. Because it's run on one specific computer and it doesn't require anything else but that computer. So, how about your network applications?
Email programs, web browsers, chat clients, things like that that are usually either going to be peer-to-peer or connecting with a server, a remote server, or need some component in the cloud. Cloud is the word of the decade, I guess.
Perfect. Exactly. They're just the ones that run over your network. And obviously, with a network application, you have one part that runs on your local computer and one that runs over or on the network server or another network computer. Alright, so we have a nice, wonderful activity. Should be fairly simple because it sounds like everybody else or everybody's got the grasp of the local and networked and the business industry and general use. Alright, so what you want to do with the activity is define whether the or decide whether the application is business industry or general use, and then if it's local or networked. Now, what I did
are
with
you doing this in chat or just
yes, everybody, yeah, we need to go into chat for the activities. Let me see. Whoops, where's my tree view?
I think Bert, Jose, and Sean.
Yeah. Bert, if you just tab around, you'll see a chat button. If you can click that for me.
Yeah, I'll be there in just one second.
Okay. Same thing, Jose. If you can just go down to the chat, or go around to the chat button.
Yeah. I'm there, thanks.
There we go. Looks like everybody's in chat. Yep. Okay. So, your first situation. What I think I'm going to do is we'll do it this way. We'll decide whether it's business industry or general use, and then go back and pick up whether it's local or networked.
Excuse me for a second. So, do you just want to? Did you want to just put B for business and A for general or something like that so that you don't have to have whole words?
Yeah, you can just do B for business, G for general, and then if you go to local or network, L or N. That will probably be the easiest thing. All right. So, yeah. We'll do it in two parts, so that way it'll kind of be a little bit easier, I think. Okay. So, first situation. A student chats with a friend in another room. Yeah. Student chats with a friend in another room. Yep. Yep. It is general.
That could be argued to be business, though, because the some business applications do have a chat feature built into them, like my flatmate.
Don't split hairs.
No,
this is not that complicated.
This is not overcomplicated.
Let's not go
this
there.
Is discovery.
Okay.
This is not BizChat Pro. You know, this is a friend is talking, and in this case, they are home, you know, drinking copious amounts of alcohol, IMing each other in the same house.
This is not ITE. This is very...
But they're professional beer tasters.
Simple. Yes, they're... yes, absolutely.
You talked to Jono after you were on Twitter that first time there, Luke.
No, be nice.
And yes, okay,
Luke
that
is talking
general
to Jono
use.
Via IM. Does that clear it up?
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, everybody's right. That is general use. That is networked. Alright, number two. A family keeps track of household expenses using spreadsheets stored on the computer hard drive. Not a very efficient or secure way, but anyway. Yes, I'm hearing general and local, which is correct. All right. Construction company develops a program to estimate the cost of building a home. The program is loaded from a CD. It is business and it is local. Okay. Number four. A real estate agent uses his computer to post information about a house listing that allows other real estate agents to access the information.
Don't you love it how we all wait for you to finish the explanation?
You might want to wait.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
You might want to do the answer now,
well,
thing, Brian.
Yeah. Okay. But with the first set of activities, it's like really, really simple. So
not that big a deal.
But yeah.
Yeah, everybody's not thinking, that big a deal. Everybody's thinking the same things, but it gets harder. So let's practice the answer now so that if people do need time to think, they get it.
Yeah, that's a valid point. Okay. Number five. Person sends an email to a friend in another country. Answer now.
Could you repeat the question?
Yes.
I had some distraction.
Okay. Scenario is, person sends an email to a friend in another country.
Is that the same as my daughter sending me an email from her bedroom to my office?
Yes, that's correct. Teenage
well,
to a country parent, yes.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, that would do it. And yes, that is general and network. And number six, student types a homework assignment using a word processor loaded on their hard drive. Answer now. And the survey says general and local. Good job. Okay, so move on to various types of computers. And they broke this up in a rather weird fashion too, but alright, we've got mainframes, which are pretty much used by big companies like IBM. You have your servers, which obviously are going to have a lot of RAM, redundant hard drives, high-speed hard drives, other redundant components to make sure that they don't fail. And they may or may not have monitors and keyboards, depending on what the network administrators need to do with them. And I think we all know about desktops, so I don't think I need to go over them, do I? Alright, I'll take the silence as no. And then you have your workstations, which are kind of a cross between a server and a desktop. They're gonna be like more or less single use, single user computers, but they're going to have really high-speed hard drives. They're going to have lots of RAM, and they're going to have like better graphics capabilities, possibly, depending on what they're used for. So they're a mix between the server and the desktop. Okay. Now they want to go through the second activity before they actually discuss laptops, handhelds, and portable devices. So, let's go ahead and pick up the activity. And they want you to identify the uses of different computer systems given the particular scenario. All right. So, electronics company designs and manufactures complex electronic boards for use in aircraft. What kind of computer would best be suited for this work? And it's either workstations, desktop, or server. So, answer now. And the resounding answer is a workstation, which is correct. Alright. Mario is purchasing a computer for his family. They will be using word processing and spreadsheet applications, and they'll want to play DVDs. So, what kind of computer would they want to purchase? Answer now. Correct. It is a desktop.
Okay.
Yeah, that was strange. Quiet. Brian.
Oh, I thought it was me. I was just checking all my headset and everything.
I thought it was me too.
No, it's okay.
It's Brian.
He'll be back real soon.
Don't call him back now.
You hear?
Well, you're
let's not start, Mary Ellen.
Why don't you consider checking out a CaviCast, an incredible wealth of information on an incredible array of topics. CaviCast, available from a QCAT mirror near you. Here he comes.
Welcome back.
Oh dear. Okay, am I here?
Yes.
Yeah.
You are now.
Yeah, you're here.
I was just advertising CaviCast in your absence. We're done now.
Okay, that would be why. A microwave is being used between me and the wireless.
not a good look.
Okay, let's try this third one again. Because I didn't hear any answers, so I don't know if anybody heard me or not. Alright, number three on this activity. A technology company develops virtual reality simulation software for the gaming industry. What kind of computer would they want to use? Okay. Let me do it this way, because I hear a couple servers and I hear a couple workstations. So, why would this particular company want to try to develop something on a server?
They might use a server like to sell and distribute their stuff, but not to actually develop it, I wouldn't think.
That's right. They wouldn't want to use a server. Because the servers, people aren't going to have... Well, servers are pretty much going to be locked up tight if they can be, and they should be for security purposes, but that's a whole other chapter. So... This company would want to use a workstation. Somebody want to answer as to why?
Because the workstation would have all of its development software on it that the technicians could all work together and get it all happening before they actually tried to sell it or distribute it.
Close.
Simulations are pretty high-powered programs, so they would want a lot of processing power and RAM, most likely, to run simulations and a lot of virtualization and the like, is my guess.
These aren't the kind of simulations that you guys would be seeing. These are like architecture simulations or simulations of doctors actually going in and cutting people open simulations. Real hardcore. Not just like your video.
Well, I was going to say, according to the activity, that's what it said was for the gaming industry, yeah. So...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's right. As to why they would want the workstations, because the simulations, in either case, whether it's gaming or whether it's the stuff like Grace was describing, you're going to have really, really graphics intensive and high. Pretty much, you would need high powered processing and a lot of RAM to do it. So, that's that. Number four. Local business just hired 10 new help desk employees to support network users. The help desk people will need to run basic office applications as well as the help desk software. So what kind of computer would they want to use?
Sorry, what was the question again?
Okay, so there's a company that just hired 10 new help desk employees. So the help desk just needs to run like basic office stuff. They need to be able to run their help desk software, their problem tracking software. So what would they need to use? Well, let's see. They would pretty much just need desktops, because they wouldn't need the servers, and they don't need the workstations, because they don't need the processing power or the RAM or anything like that. Just your basic desktop would do for that. Did we have a question or a comment?
My only thought was, 10 help desk employees means to me they have a pretty big user or client base. So I was thinking possibly they might want a server so that everyone could be accessing the same information, depending on what the business was, obviously, and if they have that many clients to, really have a big database. That's why I put possible server also.
And yeah, that's true. They were only looking for desktop, but that is true. That's a good point. Depending on how many clients they're gonna need to help with, they could do the problem tracking on the servers and post all their information up. But the answer they were looking for was desktop. All right. Let's see. Number five. Mana's mail business has grown significantly, and she needs a computer to host her website. She's expecting a significant number of clients to access the computer daily. She also wants to use the computer for centralized file storage and for employee email. What would she need now for this situation? Yep.
I think that's pretty unanimous.
Yeah, I think so too. And the survey says server. All right, good job. Any questions up to this point?
Not from me.
Okay, so we're gonna go ahead and move into digital representations of data on the computer. And most everybody was here from IT Essentials last semester, some weren't. So your basic unit on the computer is a bit, which is either a 1 or a 0. And the basic language that computers use is binary. So that's pretty much how everything is represented. In some form or fashion, everything comes down to binary, and either ones or zeros. So you have your bits, which are your ones and zeros. You have a byte, which, let's see if anybody can give me the definition of a byte.
8 bits.
Good job. It is 8 bits. That is correct. All right. And so then they go on to units of measure. What about, how big is a kilobyte?
1,000 bytes?
1,000 bytes.
Well, close enough. It's approximately 1,000 bytes. 1,024 bytes. Yep. Correct. It's 1,024 bytes. Your megabyte is how how many bytes approximately?
Be around about 1,000,000, so I guess it'd be a little bit more than that.
Yes, it would be. It's like 1,048,000 plus.
576.
Yeah.
2 to the 20.
All right. What about a gigabyte?
2 to the 30 or 1,000,000,000.
Correct. Interesting. They should have. I thought I had terabytes in here too. And I probably do. So, anybody want to take a shot at that?
A trillion.
Yep, exactly. And of course, your hard... Oh, comment?
Nope.
Okay, I thought I heard somebody key up. No big deal.
I did by accident.
Okay, no big deal. And pretty much everybody, I'm sure, is familiar with hard drives being measured in gigabytes now and terabytes. And your RAM is measured in megabytes and gigabytes. Be nice if they had terabytes of RAM, but that would be really nice, but I don't think it's possible yet. At least I haven't heard of it.
I want to see the processor to drive it.
Yeah. All right. Questions on that section.
We don't mention here that hard drive manufacturers measure gigabytes, megabytes, and terabytes in billions, millions, and trillions, and memory people measure them in the 2 to the power ofs. But yeah, we don't actually go into that in any depth. No, I could go on for another 5 minutes, Grace. That wasn't any depth, trust me. But if you're interested, there's a document in general instructions called units of storage, and they're all listed in there.
I might have a look.
That's why they put the 2 to the powers of in there.
Yeah, it's because memory manufacturers actually measure memory in those sizes, and drives measure it in the other unit, and the actual memory ones are actually called MIBI, KIBI, and GIBI, G-I-B-I, and they're actually different names for them, but it's okay, you don't need to know any of that for your test.
Extra useful knowledge. Go ahead.
I just said that's interesting, I hadn't heard that.
Aren't those memory units kind of like a...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, and then I'll go.
I was just gonna say that we had a little bit of a, shall we say, altercation about this in CCNA 2008. And in fact, it's probably still in the archives, and that's the only reason we went into this level of detail, was there were people arguing backwards and forwards who did what and why, and that's the only reason why I was any wiser.
Okay, well, in memory, though, okay, on the computers I have and most of the one I've seen, it seems like it's like a hybrid unit, what you're referring to, because I have, let's say, let's see here, that's a giga, and
heck?
It's like showing, what's that, for 1,000,000,000 in 24, approximately. For a gig of RAM.
That's because there's RAM taken out of the system memory for mapping into video cards and other sorts of things. I mean, this is more ITE. But basically, there is 1,073,000,000 yada 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 available, but there is an operating system overhead. Wow.
Oh dear. Somebody needs...
You have something going on there. We can't hear you.
You've got a biplane inside your microphone.
When that it sort of gets the hum
I'm
gets
not
really
sure what's
really
going
loud.
On with
the hum
that.
Just kept getting louder and louder and louder.
It's alright, it's better now, but whatever it was you were doing made it amazing.
Sorry, I just moved a little bit. I noticed it was keying up quite a bit, and I'm like, what's going on with this? So I just moved it a bit.
That's better.
Okay, it's still gonna key up, I think. I need to play with my sensitivity, I guess.
I think you have a fault in your power or something.
Yeah, it's a laptop.
Yeah, yeah,
we've
it's a laptop.
We've had various sorts of theories and stuff about
yeah.
it. When Brian wins the lottery, we're going to put some pressure on him to put in some money to get a new laptop. I don't think we'll need much pressure, but we'll ask very nicely that, you know, with his millions of dollars, that he get a new laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've narrowed it down to my power supply. But as far as that goes, I don't know what to do about that.
There are replacement ones that are quieter, but let's not talk about that during lecture. Let's get on with the course content.
Yeah. Alright. So, let's go on to speed, frequency, and or resolution and frequency measurements. Everybody pretty much knows that any kind of data is transmitted over either cable, some kind of copper cable, fiber, or wireless. So, communications engineers are nice. They want to make everything measured in bits rather than bytes, which is what file sizes are measured in. Your data rate is how long it will take to transfer your file between you and somebody else or somebody else to you. Your transfer rates generally are measured in kilobits per second, which is your lowercase kbps. Your uppercase k, uppercase b, is your kilobytes versus your lowercase k, lowercase b, which is your kilobits. So, when you want to calculate your download time, which is pretty much approximate because of network traffic through the internet and various other traffic on your network, it is your file size by your data rate. And they have that nice little example, which I don't have in my notes, but you can look over that in the chapter. So, now we move on to resolution, which is measured in pixels. Now, that's usually done horizontal by vertical. Then, of course, if you actually want to get into scanners, which they don't, that's a whole other story. So, questions so far?
So generally, the big number goes first, which should be generally your horizontal number. That's, I don't know, that's just something I've noticed.
No.
Yes
and no. Because depending on the aspect ratio of the screen, wide screens are actually round the other way. Like normally you write the big number does go first, but it's horizontal by vertical. But if you've got, not all screens are the same aspect ratio, so I couldn't say that all the time. But most of the time, you're probably right on the money.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll rephrase, most of the time in terms of computers, that's okay, but maybe that wouldn't apply in other things.
Yeah, you can actually have screens, like there are special A4 monitors for doing desktop publishing where the screen is actually taller than it is wide, and you use that in desktop publishing.
Oh, okay.
Wow, I never knew that.
That would be cooler. I can certainly see why it'd be...
Yeah, I'll shut up with my corner cases now, but yeah, you can actually have them so that the big number doesn't always go first.
If you look at some of your video driver options or your video controller options, you'll often see that you can switch the numbers around like that to get a vertical type display, assuming you would have a display that's capable of displaying that, you know, without chopping, having a bunch of something chopped off or on the side not showing. But I've seen that in when I've looked at the options.
They're also useful when you're emulating arcade games, when you want to turn your monitor on its side. Don't try this at home, kids, unless you've got the right monitor, but you do actually turn the monitors on the side to emulate the layouts of the arcade systems. There you go, back to you, Brian.
Anything... Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, anything else before we move on to refresh rates?
Do people understand... I think we come back... Oh, no, we haven't done resolution yet, have we?
We... Well, that's kind of what we just covered, in a nutshell.
No, that's fine. I mean, people are aware that the higher the resolution, the closer the dots are together, therefore the clearer the picture. I just figure that's worth mentioning because we're dealing with a class of vision-impaired people who may not just realise that natively, that the more dots you've got, the clearer the picture and the nicer it's going to look, in theory.
Basically, the higher the numbers, the better the detail you're going to be able to see. That's how I remember it.
Yeah, that actually is worth pointing out. Okay, we're going to move on to refresh rates. Alright, so your refresh rates are measured in hertz, or cycles per second. And pretty much what you would want to know about that, I think, unless I have this completely wrong, the higher refresh rate, unless you're dealing with certain types of monitors, the better your picture is going to be as well, because it will be refreshed more times per second.
It's a more steady picture.
Yeah. You'll get you won't get the grainy pictures with a higher refresh rate.
Just because I can't resist, can anybody hear that hum in the background of Brian's signal? That is a perfect example of a 60Hz refresh rate. So, if you actually wave your radio near your monitor, you can sometimes hear the different refresh rates, and you can actually hear what refresh rate your monitor is running at. If it's a CRT, you can actually tell. And the higher the refresh rate, the less likely you are to have like epileptic fits and stuff. And if I actually make a mess with my audio setup, we can demonstrate 50-cycle hum next week.
Okay, 60 hertz I can see, because but how can you get lower than that with a hum?
Because we're in Australia. We've actually got 50 cycles per second power over here, so we're actually lower than you are, as far as hummy bits are concerned.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. No, it is, I've heard.
Okay. The interesting stuff you learn. So, as mentioned before, your processors are measured in megahertz and gigahertz. And I actually put this in, I don't remember if it was in the chapter or not, but just because I deal a lot with radio. Just because I deal a lot with radio. Radio. Is measured in kilohertz, megahertz, or gigahertz. But, like I said, I don't remember if that's in the chapter. Whether you need to know that, that might be optional. Questions before we move on?
I think the only point I added in Saturday's lecture...
It's probably not relevant, and I don't know how to ask it, so I'll ask after lecture or something.
The other thing I was going to say was with LCDs, the technology is different with the refresh rates and stuff, so generally speaking, the images tend to look more stable on an LCD, but they're slower to update. You've got a smidge of vision, haven't you? Anybody here got a smidge of vision? I thought Kate may have a smidgy bit, did you? Or does anybody here have a smidge of vision?
I do.
Okay. Have you noticed the images on LCDs to be clearer than the images on old cathode ray tubes, generally speaking?
Yeah, because I use some on my site. I had to switch to an LCD monitor because of that.
Yeah, and in fact, the lower the refresh rate, the more it's going to wreck your eyes. So, I mean, the higher refresh rate you can get, like if you get a Sony Trinitron on a CRT, it will be better for your eyes than if you had like a cheaper monitor. A lot of people don't realize that. Okay, that was the only comment I wanted to add.
Okay. Alright. So, now we get to move on to some kind of fairly basic stuff with computers. So, your pre-assembled computers. Let's do it this way. Anybody want to name an advantage of pre-assembled computers?
You know, everything fits.
Cheaper.
At the end of this, I'm going to call out something they said in this part, but I'm going to wait till they're done.
Okay.
Because there's an inaccuracy in here that I'm going to call out on there.
We all do.
I wonder if we're thinking of the same one.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. They say that the pre-built ones are cheaper. That's inaccurate. If you know what you're doing, it can be much cheaper to build your own. I just want to put that out there.
Well, certainly if you're building your own, and that we were thinking the same thing then. I noticed that when I read the chapter this afternoon.
I saw that and I... Because I was skimming when
the exception to that would be stuff on sale, though. And depending on your market, where I live, there are not as good a sales as you would find probably in, certainly in the States and probably not in Australia. So that's definitely true. The
okay,
best deal you can get on a computer is to get someone to build
region,
it for
I guess.
If you're in the States, you can get stuff on sale so cheap sometimes, you know, from some... But that, again, depends. If it's a, you know, major name brand, you're going to pay a little bit of a premium for that, even though they're in bulk sometimes. It really can vary, but I certainly noticed that.
I think the point is also that if you're building... Let's say you're doing 30 Dells. Now, I don't know why you'd want to do that, but if you were, you might actually get them at a significant bulk discount, and they would work out cheaper than building them yourself, especially as far as time and labor are concerned. You might be able to get these cheap boxes to turn up. They're looking at the whole total cost of ownership. I agree with you. I have a problem with the statement as well. But if you look at the total TCO, it can be cheaper to just have the Dells turn up. Well, kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. I just had a problem with an outright statement like that. I saw that and I kind of went, what? Because I think a broad statement like that is just saying it broadly like that is inaccurate. But other than that,
one reason I bought a computer is warranty, because I'm tired of having my computers break all the time and I want someone to fix it. My bad computer karma keeps up.
In a pre-built computer, you can just go down to the store and grab it. You know, you don't have to plan. If your computer does go out on you and it's not still under warranty, you can just go down to the store and buy yourself an HP or a Dell or whatever, you know, and if you want to build it, you may have to order your parts, and even if you don't have to order them, it's still going to take you hours to put it together. And if you don't know what you're doing, if you don't know what you're doing, that's another issue, too, because not all parts are, you know, compatible. Even if you pick the right motherboard and processor, there's other issues you can run into that can spend a lot of time tracking down drivers, depending on what combinations of things you put together. It can be problematic. If you don't research
yes, it is
it
an exam
well.
Question, actually. I think there is a question in Chapter 1 that asks you about the advantages, and cheaper is one of them, and you do have to check the cheaper box.
Yeah.
So, when Cisco asks you, the pre-built ones are cheaper, okay?
Yeah.
Reality may not line up.
I tend to agree with you, Nehemiah, that that's their thing.
We all agree with
and
that, but the fact is...
And I'm going to put this out here, having taken Cisco tests... There are times when a Cisco question will, the answer to the Cisco question will not always sit well with you. There have been a few times, I can't necessarily pull any off the top of my head, but there have been a few times where I have answered a question not because answered the question with the answer that Cisco wanted to hear, even though I felt that answer wasn't entirely correct, and sometimes that's just what you have to do.
Yeah, this is what they will say, Cisco says this, but really, this is what, you know, and it's with any organization.
We will try to point those out whenever we can.
Yeah. And that just happens. I mean, I'm putting that out there for, you know, as a FYI for students, you will encounter that. Back to your regularly scheduled. I guess that was a little...
That's cool. But yeah, I mean, those of us who took IT Essentials last semester, there was a bunch of quiz answers that, at the ends of the chapters, that were just totally what we all kind of considered, like, not the correct answer, but that's what Cisco wanted, so... That's that. Lower costing we've already covered. Pre-built computers are adequate to perform most applications. And of course you don't have any wait for assembly. And they're also used by less knowledgeable consumers who don't have a lot of specialized needs. And of course the go ahead.
No, I think he was just scoffing.
No.
Were you?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I really shouldn't be up for that. My fault.
That's cool. But of course, disadvantages that you pretty much lack any kind of performance that you can get out of a custom-built computer. So your custom-builts, they claim that, well, the end user can specify components that meet their needs. They generally support higher performance applications like your graphics and your gaming. They claim they're more costly. Well, we've already gone through that debate. And longer waiting period for assembly, depending on if you do it yourself well and you know what you're doing. You could probably do it quicker than what the manufacturers do, but that's just my personal opinion. But Cisco says that could be a longer wait. All right. So, any other questions, comments before we move on? All right. Let's see what we're looking at for time here. All right. So we got about 40 minutes. Okay. So, we're going to talk about the motherboard, CPU, and RAM. All good fun stuff that has to cooperate with each other. Your motherboard...
And RAM is still not an installation procedure.
What's that?
Nothing. Sorry.
It's okay, we'll have counseling for you afterwards, Nehemiah, we promise.
Okay. I don't know. Okay. Alright. Anybody want to define what the motherboard is?
Anyone?
The main circuit board for the computer?
Yes, that is.
Someone's key.
Somebody was keyed up. I didn't know if we had a comment. That's why I was waiting.
Motherboard's the central space where all the devices plug into, and that basically coordinates with the processor to give the power and data.
Yes. They are pretty much just one giant circuit board that everybody and everything has to flow through. All your data has to flow through it. So, when you select the motherboard, you want to make sure that it's going to support the CPU type and speed that you want. You also want to make sure it's going to support the amount and the type of RAM, and have all the nice slots that you need for all your nice, wonderful graphics and other cards. And that looks to be about it under that. Your CPU obviously processes all the data that runs through your computer. And obviously when you select CPU, you want to you want to keep in mind your processor speed and your bus speed. Now, anybody want to take
CPU
a stab at what
not
your...
the big thing that sits on the floor.
Yeah, no. Your CPU is
the
nice
tower is not
chip
the CPU.
That fits in there.
We'll take your ITE1 training wheels if you call the tower the
I
CPU.
I get increasingly irritated when I hear people do that. I almost corrected someone at work. But I realized I shouldn't. But I wanted to
no,
so
no.
bad.
That big thing is the hard drive.
You kind of want to beat them with the tower and...
Don't tempt us.
Yeah, really. anybody want to... Processor speed's pretty well. I'm not even going to go there because I think everybody knows what the processor speed is. How about your bus speed? Anybody want to take a shot at that one?
That would be the speed at which the computer transfers data between the CPU and the devices on the bus.
Yes. That's good enough. it's pretty much just how fast the data is transferred from CPU to any other kind of memory. Alright. Then, of course, you have your RAM, which I think pretty much everybody knows what that is here. So, then you have your adapter cards. And, obviously, they're going to add some sort of functionality depending on the card. Then they talk about storage devices. And anybody want to name a, not necessarily a type, but a kind of storage device?
SCSI.
let's maybe I should say name a type because of the way that they're split up here.
Okay, whoever just
you got your
up
SSDs,
no
your solid state drives.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hard drives, network drives, all that.
Yeah. There's one more that's missing.
Optical drives.
Optical drive. Yep, that's it. So they have your magnetic storage devices, which are your kind of older hard drives. Then they have your optical storage, which is DVD, CDs, Blu-ray. And then they have flash drives. And that's pretty much how that's split. Which, just out of curiosity, because I'm not 100% sure, but which category would the solid state drives fall under?
They'd be under.
I'd put
storage.
Them under the
MTD.
Flash.
Yeah, they're memory technology devices. I think their subclass is MTD. I don't know, unless you've got a different classification for them, Nehemiah.
I think they fall under flash.
Yeah, the solid state drives are flash based. Flash memory.
Yeah, the difference is they've got wear leveling on them, which a lot of the regular flash stuff doesn't have, but the solid states have wear leveling and sort of smarts to drive the flash. But I believe the subclass is actually MTD, or memory technology devices. It refers to anything that doesn't use optical or magnetic at this point in time.
Huh. Yeah. I didn't know which category to actually put those under. So that's an interesting one for me.
So our quantum memory storage would be fall under that MTDs as well, I guess, then.
Yeah, but quantum memory, the flash stuff uses the quantum memory stuff as well. There's something to do with electron tunneling. I read the Wikipedia article once and ran away very fast in the other direction. If you look up flash memory on Wikipedia, it's quite complex.
Alright, any questions so far? Okay, do we really need to go over peripherals? I kind of tend to think everybody has a decent enough knowledge of them. And, of course, if you don't, you can always read the chapter. But
I'm
curious, how
thinking
many people
everybody...
have read the chapter already? Has everybody read the chapter already?
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, good.
That is epic.
That's cool. Alright, so, then next section they go into is cases and power supplies, and they talk about surge suppressors and the UPS, which is your uninterruptible power supply. This crowd, I really don't think I need to go into either one of those, do I?
So long as you remember not to plug your printer into your UPS, you should be all right.
Well, your laser printer.
That's a valid point.
And wasn't there something else that didn't light them either? What, sorry, Luke?
I said, wasn't there something else that didn't light UPSs either? Was it not, I don't know, like CRT monitors or something?
Yeah, that's right.
What would happen if you plugged a laser printer into an uninterrupted power supply?
Okay, it overloads it. When it warms up the heating element, in fact, I know somebody who has a UPS plugged into it, and basically what happens is when the laser fires up, the UPS goes... because it's actually on overload, and then it sort of gets over itself. He really shouldn't plug it in there, but basically when you go to print something, it's a hell of a current draw for a very short amount of time.
We actually
and the
have
UPS is not designed
work.
About for that.
It might change. We just got a new one today, but somebody was telling me with our own laser printer, the lights would actually flicker slightly when it would start to print.
A bit like the bridge of the Enterprise. Yeah, because it pulls down a lot of current. And depending on how everything's wired up, the lights can all dim down. We just got a new one,
so that might change.
Did they really draw that much current and power?
I think it's about 20 or 30 amps for... you know, it's a few split seconds. It's a fair bit of juice.
I never turn mine off for that reason.
Well, turning it off doesn't make any difference. It's the fact that as soon as you start printing, like you can leave it in standby, and it's not going to draw anything really very much. It's only when you drop a page to it that it actually warms up the heating elements and stuff and draws a hell of a lot of current. So as soon as you print to it, it's going to do that incredible current draw.
I didn't know that.
I need to never AM radio and laser printer, anybody? I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah, it makes cool
noise. Interesting
noises.
One.
I used mine on the monitor at work today, so I keep one with me all the time.
You've gone quiet for some reason, Sean. Not that it matters.
Oh, I moved my microphone because I was drinking water.
Fair enough.
Okay. Next section they want to talk about is safety and... best practices. And judging, I really don't know. I seriously doubt I need to go over any of this either, do I?
Just make sure that you rub your feet on the carpet before you touch the computer, just so that
you
can create that nice zim.
You have to go over the
nice
safety procedures.
You have to do that,
Brian.
Okay. Okay. Alright. Then... let me scroll back up to the top here. There we go. All right. Liability purposes. Everybody can be bored out of their mind for a few minutes.
I'm going to say...
better to be bored than dead.
Yeah, really. Yeah. All right.
Is that being bored, Steve?
That lasts much longer.
Very good.
We get a whole chapter on it in ITE.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, chapter 2 of ITE, I think.
For those of you guys who are doing both.
Well, they'll just know what they're doing a lot better.
You guys do chapter 2 is a safety stuff for ITE,
yep,
isn't it?
It's all.
Yep,
yep,
that's what we're talking about.
You're popping out, nice Australian woman. I forget your name. Your headset's popping a little bit.
Alright, let me quickly go over this, even though it's going to be boring, but anyway, gotta do it. So, obviously you want to turn off and unplug your computers before you go into them, keep your work area clutter-free, even though we can't see, they say to wear proper eye protection, which obviously is a good idea because you don't want dust or anything like that blowing in your face or your eyes. Not fun. Use proper lighting. Well, for some of us that doesn't apply unless you have somebody that's sided with you. Be aware of sharp edges on the case. That's always a good idea. I can't say I've ever bled into a computer before, but I've run into some pretty sharp edges fixing them. And they can be they can be fun.
I didn't on my own laptop.
Oh God. That's just not fun. Obviously, unless you're really well trained, you don't want to open a power supply or monitor because of high voltage. Unless you want to end up getting a very shocking experience. And then they go on and talk about that hot swappable components, which are components that can be removed without actually having to power down the system. Very nice when it comes to laptops and servers, at least some servers. And they say if you're unsure if a component's hot swappable, turn off the computer and unplug it. Alright. So they talk about ESD, which is electrostatic discharge. And I think everybody pretty much knows about that, that it can damage computer components, especially RAM. And I have actually seen a couple adapter cards that have been damaged by ESD. So they talk about the anti-static wrist straps. They say to use those to avoid ESD on computers. And of course, you don't want to use excessive force when you install or remove components, or you're going to end up breaking the motherboard or the component. Fun times if you do that, because then you're going to have to replace either or.
I think the reason
is, like I said, RAM is not an installation procedure.
Do what, Kerry?
Yeah, that's what he said the first
time. Yeah, exactly. RAM is not an installation procedure. You do not ram it into the slot. The reason they're so heavy on the anti-static is because, yes, it can damage components, and when you're holding a WIC, which are the internal cards for the routers that are worth $600 to $1,000, you probably do not want to be scuffing your feet along the carpet as you drag it towards the router, because they are expensive cards, and Cisco won't replace them if you static damage them.
Oh, God, that's just...
And your employer will kill you.
I bet they probably would if they're anywhere from that price range. Good lord. Alright. So, the recommendations are to use an anti-static mat or wrist strap. They say use anti-static bags to move computer components, and don't put more than one in a bag because you run the risk of... you can run the risk of basically causing damage to them if you stack more than one in a bag. Obviously they say don't install and remove components when the computer's on, unless you want to get a shocking experience, but they say
cutting one,
ground off and
your fingers in the fan.
Yeah. Although I've actually had a computer case open and just kind of put my hand up kind of near the fan to actually test and see if it was running. But not a good idea.
I actually broke the blades off the fan doing that once. I was busy reading a Terry Pratchett book and the fan was spinning and I put my hand down to check it and it went and then it just didn't spin as well after that because one of the blades had broken off. And then the same night, I actually managed to snap one of the clips off a processor mounting bay. So don't read Terry Pratchett books and fix your computer. That's the moral of the story, guys. Oh, really?
If you're gonna do, if you're gonna check like that,
sound
do
effect,
it with.
By the way.
Do it with the back of your hand.
Get more Wednesday.
I do check things like that myself, but do that kind of check with the back of your hand so you don't catch fingers. That's my advice for the evening.
And if they're the 6800 RPM fans, make sure they've got a grill across the top of them, or don't check with your fingers because they will take the top of your finger off.
Bye-bye.
Not fun.
That'd make reading Braille interesting.
It would.
Quite.
Yeah.
Do bad things to your fan as well, probably.
You'd definitely bleed in your computer then.
It would make a brilliant red color, yes. Imagine explaining that to the ambulance. Die, tried to fit my fan.
A fan with a finger sticking up.
Aiden, yeah. Go in and please turn your amplifiers up. You're very difficult to hear over Brian's hum.
Just a note for...
Sorry, I need to play with my sensitivity.
No, you're okay. Do I have volume? It's just... Yes, you're okay. You're fine. You're louder than Aiden.
Yeah,
mic moved again.
Just Aiden's disappeared into the background somewhere.
Yeah, put those amplifiers up at 70 if you can.
I'm thinking I need to play with my sensitivity a bit too.
Like, I think you've got so much hump, the sensitivity is going to be a problem, unfortunately.
Alright. Alright, so they say work on a bare floor. Obviously, you don't want static building up, which is what you can do on carpet. Hold cards by the edges so that you don't touch chips or damage the connectors. And obviously you don't want to touch chips or the boards with a magnetic screwdriver. They say turn off the computer before moving it because the hard drive spins and that's just not good.
I've got a question about the magnetic screwdriver thing, if I may, sorry to interrupt.
Okay, officially, you're not supposed to use them. Officially, it's bad for your gear. Officially, you're not supposed to have them anywhere near your computer. Unofficially, if you're a fumbly blind person, they're really, really handy to stop you from dropping screws. However, if you break your stuff with them, nobody will be held liable.
Yeah, my question is, though, like, with magnets, like, particularly storing screws on magnets, can that then magnetize the screw, which could do bad things when you put it back in, or is that not something I need to worry about?
I've never seen that happen. I've stored screws on PC speaker magnets for 2.5 years plus and then screwed them into the system board, and I've never had any bad things go wrong.
The magnet level is so low that I've never heard of it.
If you stored them
problems.
On a hard drive magnet, you might have
some problem. No, the PC speaker magnets are about as strong as the hard drive magnets, to be honest. I've never...
Oh, really?
The residual magnetism, because it's soft iron in the screws, it's not so bad.
How strong are PC speaker magnets? I've never seen one.
I don't have a Gauss measurement for you, sorry, but they'll pick things up. That's about all I can say.
Oh, okay.
Alright. So, they say keep installations, CDs.
Uh-oh.
What's up?
Someone microwaving lunch again?
I think we lost him.
Yeah.
He'll be back.
You got to wonder how much actual radiation leaks out of those microwaves if they're strong enough to affect the wireless. It probably needs to be tested.
Depends on the microwave.
I always say
don't store
food on top of your microwave or in front of it because the radiation could do interesting things to it. I don't like the fact that mine's at groin level in the kitchen cupboard.
Oh, you're back with us, Aiden.
Did you boost your amplifiers for us?
Yep.
Where are they?
Like, did you get
to 70%?
Okay, you might want to give them a bit more.
I did one of it. Okay.
Yeah, you only need to do one of them.
The first one, right?
Did you adjust the one
the one that warns you?
That said,
did it yell at you?
Yeah,
you might have
wireless signal.
If you got the wrong one.
Okay, just give it to 90 if you can, Aiden. Go and knock it up to 90, and you should be just beautiful. Well, you're already beautiful, but
okay,
beautiful,
I'm back.
For those concerned. Welcome back.
We'll call him Mr. Cotter.
Okay, let's try that.
That's good.
Oh, that's beautiful.
There you go.
See, I told you you'd be beautiful.
Glad you have faith in me.
That does sound better.
Now I can even be my usual loud noise self.
Yeah. That's a lot better. Alright, I don't think we have any questions on the safety stuff, do we?
No, I think we're good.
Yeah, I kind of figured. alright. So, they talk about installing components and verifying operation. So, they say determine if components hot swappable. If not, unplug the computer, turn it off. Not in that order, because you want to keep your hard drives and everything good. Number two, you want to attach your anti-static wrist strap to the case of the computer. You obviously want to pull the old components out if you're replacing a new one. Don't let the screws fall onto the motherboard, and don't break any plastic clips. They say to check the connection type on the new components, make sure it's the same kind. Well, hopefully you did that before, because otherwise you're wasting your money and your time. They say place the component in the place the new component in the correct slot and the correct orientation. Obviously, if you don't, well, you're not going to get that new component in there. Obviously, they say some components may require drivers, specifically like the network cards, your modem. Your modem cards, all that good stuff. So you want to get your drivers from your CD, or better off, go to the manufacturer's website. Obviously, your components use your system resources, like your DMA, your direct memory access, your IRQs, which is your interrupt requests, and your IO addresses, which are your input-output addresses. At least with Windows XP and up, since that's what they talk about in this course is XP, that's pretty much all configured for you. Hopefully. Otherwise, if not, you'll have to configure it yourself. So then they talk about installing peripherals and verifying operation. And, of course, they say you want to connect the peripherals to your host using appropriate cable or wireless connection. Obviously you want your peripheral to have power if it doesn't get it from your USB ports. And of course you want to install your drivers and test your functionality. So, after all that nice fun stuff, let's take a chapter quiz. How fun! Alright, everybody is, whoops. Bert, you probably need to get back into chat. Okay. Yeah. Bert, are you here?
Yeah, I'll be over there.
Oh, okay. Just checking. Alright, we'll go ahead and get this quiz out of the way, since we still have a whole 20 minutes. Alright, 10 question quiz. So, number one, a company requires a high-end computer that can store a significant amount of files and process applications quickly and simultaneously. Which two components are the most critical? So, we're going to do a wire and N for these. Your first component is RAM. Yep, yes, it is RAM. And what about CPU? Good deal. And yes, it is CPU. So, We have also have, which we've already got our two, but we got the video card, sound card, and modem. Yeah, I'd love to see how those process applications. Yeah, really. Okay.
Video, maybe. So,
which, number two. Which peripheral is a storage device that connects the USB interface and allows files to be saved and moved between computers? So it's either A, B, C, or D. A is modem, B is scanner, C is printer, D is a flash drive, E is a network interface card. Answer now. And the overwhelming answer is flash drive, which is correct. Number three. Which component provides backup power to a computer system for a short period of time? Is it A, CPU, B, modem, C, a surge suppressor, or D, uninterruptible power supply? Answer now. And the overwhelming majority is a universal or uninterruptible power supply, which is correct. Okay. So which term describes static electricity that can be transferred from your body to components in the computer? Is it A, voltage... What's that?
It'll be quicker to just get them to type it in. What's the three letters that refers to this?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be quicker.
Well done, guys.
Yep. All right. They want two examples of input-only peripheral devices. So a wire and on this one. Printer. That is correct. That is not an input device. What about a scanner? Yes, scanner is. And what about a joystick? There we go. Very good. Yes, joystick is. Although, as Carrie pointed out, Friday night / Saturday morning, that can be kind of an input and output, depending on the force feedback ones. Then, of course, you have flash drives, external NIC, or a monitor. Yeah. All right. Exactly. Not very likely. Okay. Small real estate company with one office wants to purchase a computer for file storage. What computer would be the best choice? Would it be a mainframe server, which is A, B is standalone server, C is a rack mount server, D is a workstation, or E is a blade server? Choose now. And yes, it is a standalone server. Okay. User opens an application and sends a message to a friend in another country. Which application has been used? Is it A, local, B, graphics, C, network, D, standalone? Choose now. I'm getting N's and C's, so yeah. It is a network. Good job. Okay. So, number 8. Wants you to match up statements with either workstation or server. So, what about used for virtual reality simulation? Workstation or server? WRS. And the workstations have it. That is what it is for. It's a workstation. What about normally secured in a room? It is a server. I'm not sure you'd want a secure workstation down that tightly. Powerful graphics capabilities. Yes. That would be a workstation. Usually has redundant components such as hard drives. That would be a server. Because I'm not sure you'd want to put that much into a workstation. let's see. Runs high-end applications like engineering programs. That's technically workstation. What they're... Yeah, that's considered workstation. Your servers could probably do it, but they're not really graphic-intensive computers, really.
Is this the flight simulator one again that we always and ah about?
Yeah.
This is the engineering program one.
Yeah,
engineering programs definite. Well, see, there are corner cases that run on a server, but I suppose they do run on workstations. Like you run CAD and stuff on workstations and stuff.
And let's do the last one of this question, which is provide services to multiple clients. And yes, that would be a server. Okay. What measurement is commonly what measurement is commonly associated with graphics resolution? Is it hertz, which is A, B, which is megabytes, C, which is gigabytes, or D, which is BPS, or E, which is pixels? Hertz are used for your monitor refresh rate. Your pixels are more commonly for resolution, which is the answer. Okay. So, we have match the value with its definition. So, we have bit, byte, kilobyte, megabyte, gigabyte, and terabyte. So, definitions are as follows. Approximately 1,000 bytes is what? Very, very good. That would be a kilobyte. What about approximately 1 trillion bytes? That would be a terabyte. Yes. Alright, what about approximately 1 million bytes? Very, very good. That would be a megabyte. What about a billion bytes? Yes, that would be a gigabyte. And one or a zero? Yes, that would be a bit. And what about 8 bits? Very good, that would be a byte. Alright, thus ends chapter 1. With 5 whole minutes to go.
So does the same kind of thing happen as with ITE, that you will put the exam up sometime during the week and we can do it when we're ready?
Yep, I'll be putting them up this first week after Brian does his task list, because I have yet to get him on the class, which is going to happen this week, so it should be all good.